Welcome to Bitter Hill Explains, where I reach back in history to the year 2014, the astrophysics of the final astrophysics section of the final year paper at high school. And what's happening is that I've decided to just hammer away at this area to teach and reteach and build up skills rather than hop from topic to topic. Focus on one topic and continue to build. A part of the continuing to build is that I will teach or just revise you on the general science. That's the question I'm going to ask. Are you through the formula sheets as you should do? Actually answer the actual sheets, which is perhaps what you should do at home when you're actually revising stuff rather than just going cold. Depends what suits you. You may want to go cold in questions. Stirs you up and guides you to what to study. Well, I can't do that with you. That could be a technique. And also knowing the formula sheets so you're not hitting a blank. It's an more automatic way of going through. Of course, dare I say, I've just recently talked about how the Australian Army's changed, the actual assessment has changed, and next year there's going to be no astrophysics section. But for this year, there will be, and that's look at. So for astrophysics, that section, we're going to talk about stars, and stars are up in space. They're circular because the gravitational force brings the, they're spherical because the gravitational energy pulls them inwards. They're very, very spherical. They can be slightly bulged if they spin. There's the dynamics forces. Forces involved in them, and I should vary that again. The red giants, are very, very large, and they have solar winds and magnetic fields interacting with them, and so they're actually cabbage spaced. I'm sorry, I wanted to give a simple explanation before I get out there. They're producing lights due to nuclear fusion in their core. The pressure and temperature is such that the coulombic repulsion between two protons, which is the positive charge, is momentarily overcome. The protons are put in sufficient proximity that they can fuse. And the critical thing is that they fuse and via the weak nuclear force produce a neutron. And to produce a neutron, they will produce a the neutron will be produced by the production of a positron. Goes a positron and a neutrino. There'll be sufficient energy to produce that. Produces deuterium and undergoes a cycle very quickly to produce helium. After the deuterium is produced, it's actually only a very, very short time. It's a long period of time to produce it, and because it's such a long period of time to actually produce that, I'm sorry, there's a garbage truck coming out, but this is a podcast and we'll get through this as it is. So because it takes such a long time, stars, depending on the heat and temperature, can take billions of years, and our stars taking I think 14 billion years to burn through, or 12 billion years, so it's a third to halfway through its life cycle. And as it burns, it slowly accumulates helium in its core, and so our sun is slowly filling up with helium in its core because its pollution doesn't go out. But what we're going to talk about is the stars are glowing, the stars are in space, and the stars at a certain distance. And there's a fundamental way that we can judge distance that we do all the time, any people of us who have two eyes. Not all of us do, but not all of us have the brain processing power. So there are some people with two eyes, binocular vision, but the brain doesn't actually give any distance information. So I've actually met one or two people who don't use something called parallax, and that is where an image looks different from two viewing positions, and the closer you are, to an object, the more it changes as you close one eye and open the other. So you can hold your thumb up in front of you and fix your gaze at something in the far distance and then close one eye or then the other. Or you can do a similar thing with a camera, take a photograph and align it, and you'll see that things in the near area, tend to change the position with your position, and that's a thing called parallax. And there's a system where we can actually do this with the Earth by rotating around the Sun and taking images 6 months apart. Gives us a two astronomical units movement that gives an angular separation of movement of things close to us. The closer they are, the greater they move. In fact, they move a fair number of degrees if they're only a few meters away, but if they're a long distance away, they move a 60th of a 60th and a second of a degree. An arc, something called an arc second, moves. You need very good cameras and instruments, better than your brain, or you need a very big head if you want to actually observe. Oh, essentially, moving around the sun is having a big head. The important thing is that for historical reasons, we use the half angle. So that's one AU and half the angle to get the distance and use of parallax, so we can actually see. This is giving us a three-dimensional view. There's other distances. There's called HR or spectral. It's called spectral parallax. The spectra is used to calculate the actual brightness of a star. That would be if you stood a standard distance away, how bright it should be. 10 parsecs is the magic distance from a star, or 32 light years. They're about 32.6 or 3, I really can't remember off the top of my head. That will give you the brightness of standard brightness of a star, and so you can say, look, this is a typical main sequence star, I know all about it. Here's one I prepared earlier at distance, we know so much about it. Now, here's there, it's a long distance away, but it's actually very dim, and so you can use the inverse square law. And then there's other ways. Australians have used time dilation, actually looking at how the clock slowing down or clock to actually work out the distance and use other factors there. There's still a parallax. And then the other thing that we're going to talk about is judging the color of stars without a spectrometer. So if you've got a spectrometer that has got a little computer, a whole lot of computation can be done, or you can actually slide in a little lens piece, a little filter. And so the main idea is that there are terms of blue filter, visible filter, and red filter. So that's BVR filter. So the interesting thing about filters is that a blue filter is, it doesn't filter out the blue light. It is a notch filter and only lets blue light in. So it's like a poor man's spectrometer, on again, off again. And instead of the light being, each star being smeared across as a rainbow pattern, or kept by an optical fiber, you take one picture with the blue filter and another picture with the red filter, and for the same star or visible filter, and you work out its spectra. And so if it's a something which is emitting mainly in the blue, it will not be knocked out by the blue filter, but if you put a visible filter, it will suddenly look a lot darker, but only compared to the background radiation. So it's actually doesn't appear brighter with the filter, the correct filter, but it feel is definitely dimmed with the exclusion filter, so the filter excludes from there. And so with that, you can actually put this information in to work out its spectral class. From its spectral class, you can just look up the spectral classes at the bottom of the page. There's a random array of letters, O, A, something, or where a G, and it goes right down to M, all different spectral classes. I do know that people have learnt a spectral class, but that is just, I think, insane. This is your background information, which I'm discussing with you. So you need the HR diagram, the spectral class, and then look up. If there's a star of a certain magnitude, it should have this magnitude at 10 parsecs. So if it's brighter or less, if it's more brighter, it's close to you, closer than 10 parsecs. If it's much dimmer, by the factor that it's dimmer, it's further away. So that's my specialist lesson. It's not a, it's obviously now a design lesson to help me answer the first two questions and obviously shorten the length of this podcast. Now we'll go through, and you'll burn your head out doing this, the four equations that are deemed to provide for this examination topic. So you'll be given examinations for, sorry, formula for the examination topics. I don't know why they do this. I just think someone has said, look, you can't get someone to write learn equations. Let's go through it. The first equation is d equals 1 p. D is the distance in parsecs, something is away. So a d in this case is not in meters, but it's in parsecs, and each parsecs is roughly 3.2 light years. 10 parsecs is the magic distance that everyone has gone on. There's a historical reason set by the ancient Greeks why 10 parsecs is there. And 1p, the p is the value in arc seconds. So you have to, if it's a, it's a 1 on 300 and 3,600th of a degree, and so you'll be given a distance in arc seconds, and you put that in there, and that will magically get your d. The next formula is big M, the absolute magnitude equals the small m, the apparent magnitude minus 5 log base 10, all into d on 10. So d is the distance, 10 is the magic parsecs. Log of 10 parsecs divided by 10 is log of 1. Log of 1 is 0. So that factor goes out, and at 10 parsecs, it's all the same. Now, a few things about magnitude. If it's got a larger magnitude number, it's actually dimmer. And the reason that the 5 is there is that the Greeks basically counted 1 to 5, and 5, by the time it was 5, it was 100 times dimmer. And the way why 100 times dimmer, well, that's just the luck of the draw. They just were able to judge that something is in class 5. So they said the first rank people, members of the most elite stars, will put number 1. And second rank, like ranks of society, so your first, second, third tier, but the way it came up, and of course the Greeks didn't necessarily have. Well, they didn't have a zero for a while, you know, that's obviously, and whether they obviously had control of negative numbers, but they didn't obviously represent it as we had negative numbers. So this is really a historical artifact for it. I'll just read it to you again. M, the magnitude, the absolute magnitude of a star is the apparent magnitude of a star minus 5 log d on. On 10. So what this, we won't go into it anymore. I think I'll leave it like that. The next formula is for two stars A and B with intensities IA and IB. The ratio of intensities IA divided by IB equals 100, all raised to the power of the apparent magnitudes. The apparent magnitudes is the ratio on Earth, MA minus MB divided by 5. And it's divided by 5 because historically a 5 difference in magnitude is a factor of 100 difference. So if they're 10, it's 100 times 100. It's just direct getting of that formula up. Now, the next formula is Kepler's law. You've only got four formula here, and I will go through rigorously the formula, even though we won't use most of these in answering the next questions. Is M1 plus M2 for a binary star? They will orbit at a radius. They'll orbit a period T, T squared, and sorry, T, a big T, and have a radius between them. So between your telescope, you can actually observe stars are so far apart, and get their radius in light years apart or fractions of light years apart, and you can watch them for a long time and actually work out their period if you're so due, or you could actually work out their velocity, things from Doppler shifts, etc. This version of Kepler law is that m1 plus m2, the actual total mass, equals 4 pi squared r cubed divided by g on t squared. From another period of the course, Kepler's law is basically the actual period increase as you go out. The period gets much larger as you go out. It goes larger than just in proportion to the radius. It's in proportion times the square root of the radius. So therefore, if something is orbiting 4 times further out, it will have a period of 4 times the square root of 4, a period of 8 times longer. Okay, let's get back into the actual questions across here. So this is part 3, where I actually do the question. Part 3 is where I do the question and read the answer. Okay, the diagram below, and I have to describe the diagram, shows stars in the same section of star sky viewed 6 months apart. Da-da! And they show the star X being high up in one quadrant and then lower down in the next quadrant, and all the other stars staying exactly the same. So this star apparently moved. Explain why the stars, why the star appears in different positions. Well, star X appears in a different position. The other stars are very, very far away and don't experience a parallax shift. This experiences a parallax shift, and then you would draw a diagram of different viewing positions against a background, and showing that a line between the viewer and the background goes onto a background decorated with very far away stars, and showing for the two positions. And let's read what they say. Come along here. Star X is a close star. A close star appears to move against the background of the stars as the viewing location is changed by the motion of the Earth around the Sun. Okay, you probably have to say, if you drew a diagram with Earth and Sun, the stars that are further away move very little as they are too far away. This effect is called solar parallax. Well, there's your answer. That's what they think is good enough. A star is 2.5 parsecs from Earth. Calculate how much brighter the star X would appear from Earth than if it was viewed from 10 distance. Let me read that one again. Calculate how much brighter star X would appear from Earth than if it were viewed from a distance of 10 parsecs. I just can't quite get that into my head. Star X is 2.5 parsecs from Earth. Calculate how much brighter star X would appear from Earth than if it were viewed from a distance of 10 parsecs. I find it very difficult to actually calculate what they mean. It says, are they saying that the star is actually closer to us, or the star is that one? Now, is it brighter if it was viewed from a distance, that if it was moved to a distance of 10 parsecs? If it was moved further away, it would be dimmer. And you can actually do this in head inverse square law, applying the inverse square law. 10.5 is a quarter of 10, so it will be inverse square, it will be a 16th of the brightness. It will be actually dimmer. Let's read what the answer is. They actually put this into their calculations. They've done a really crazy thing here. They've put m, they've used the equation m equals, big M equals m minus 5 log 2.5 on 10, and then worked out that 5 log 2.5 on 10 is 3.01, and 100 to 3.01 divided by 5, using the second formula here, gives 16. Therefore, the star appears 16 times brighter. Well, I just find that really hard to work out myself what exactly they mean here. And I'm not involved in here. I'm just an honest person going through. We have to move on. Question B. We're only going to do two questions here. Why would a spectral class A star, and they provide you a HR diagram which shows that A is a little bit brighter than our star, a little bit bluer than our star, be brighter when viewed through a blue filter than through a red filter? You would say that a blue filter, it is a blue star, it's predominantly blue, it produces more blue than red light. So a blue filter will let all the blue through, and the red filter will knock out most of the brightness of the light. So that's why it is. And so let's read their answer. Here it is. Outlines the type for 2 marks. Outlines the type of light emitted by an A-class star. Relates this to the function of red and blue filters. I think I've done that. The star produces more blue light than red light. It would appear brighter when viewed through a blue filter, as blue filter lens lets through only blue light and less red light. It says less red light. Red filter would allow less light through, and the star would appear to be less bright. Or a red filter. And I say it a different, slightly different way. Why is it useful to view stars through different coloured filters? Well, the answer to that is by using different coloured filters, you can get a colour index, which is of magnitude, which is the change in magnitude for, I think it's V minus B. With colour indexes less than zero, it's less than apparently 110,000 degrees Kelvin. So it's, I think it's B minus V. And so if it's if it's very blue, it's got a smaller magnitude in the blue than in the red. The visible distracted red is yellow green. So the red, the yellow green, the visible is a larger number because it's much dimmer. That's subtracted and it appears more blue. With the blue, you can actually there see the spectral class and actually work out where it is on the Hertzsprung-Russell diagram, and then from the Hertzsprung-Russell diagram, work out its actual magnitude, its actual big M. So the colour index converts small m, your apparent magnitude, into an absolute magnitude using the Hertzsprung-Russell diagram approximation. Therefore, eventually gives you the distance of the star away going through all the equations. Again, let's read it. By viewing the light through a blue filter and then using a yellow-green filter, V, the different filters allow the colour index to be measured. This can help classify the star as a quantitative measure of its colour. The brightness of the star can vary depending on the method of the measurement. By having a standard set of filters, the measurement is standardised. What was the question they asked? Well, it is, but I would say that doesn't answer. It is useful because therefore you know where it is in the HR diagram. Its spectral class, you can actually get a spectral class from its colour index, and therefore from its, that to work out how far away it is. That's why my answer there. So this is a new format where I teach a bit, go through the formula a bit, and then go through a smaller set of questions. So that's it for this podcast. In the meantime, keep on thinking science, doing science, and eventually teaching science when you've finally understood enough and done it enough yourself. Don't teach science if you haven't actually got yourself thoroughly thoroughly on top of all the issues. Thanks for listening.